got it. Oh, yes. Beautiful day. Let's get Tom in here. Come on inside, Tommy. Come on in. There you go.
Hey, John, went for a walk to balance your dive-in.
How'd that go?
It was pretty good. I just decided if you can do it half hour before the show, I'm going to do it half hour before the show.
It gets your blood going and everything. Bad night here at the cabin. I'll tell you about that later on. Diving in! The relationship between Dougie and I took a very dark turn last night.
Oh, wow. He was hurt. You didn't want him to videotape you anymore or film you.
No. We'll get to that later. That's the other news. State Superintendent Chris Rakedahl says teachers committed to not returning till they're vaccinated need to reconsider. Oh, come on, Chris. I guess he was on with G and Ursula, and they talked to our superintendent, State of Washington. And, you know, I kind of took a shot at him in the pre-show meeting saying, you know, what does the guy do for a living? I mean, why can't he get in there and, you know, whack some people around and get them back into the classroom? And I see he makes $136,000 a year. You know how much a superintendent of the state of schools in Seattle makes? Almost $300,000. And in Bellevue, that guy makes, that Dr. Evans, whatever his name is, makes like $240,000. Chris Rakedahl, the whole state. He's got the whole state he's doing, I don't know what with, but he's only making $130,000. Come on, Chris. Get in there. Get stuff done. No wonder you don't have any, you know, no one's got any respect for you. So he's on there and he talks to G and Ursula about what's going to be done. Here it is, Washington State. This is Chris Rakedahl. His reaction to the idea of prioritizing teachers. So imagine this, everybody. You have a 70-year-old woman, let's say it's your mom. She needs to get the coronavirus vaccination, but the person in front of her is a 27-year-old comely teacher there in Renton.
This is really good news. We have been asking for prioritization of educators through this. We were about 3 weeks away under the current phases, so this speeds things up. Educators can go quickly now. The challenge is we didn't get more vaccine. And this adds about 200,000 more folks to the existing tier of eligible people in our state, in addition to those in the very first tier, as you recall. So it's building a little bigger backlog until the J&J comes in and a couple of these other providers build more capacity. On balance, very good news. We're moving quickly, but it does create a little more bottleneck for a short time.
Yeah, John, your 70-year-old qualifies.
Right.
Yeah.
Anybody does qualify.
65 and over. So the teachers are joining that 70-year-old woman's group.
Are they
group.
In front of the 70-year-old?
No. We're
behind
all in
the 70-year-old.
My hunch is they're behind just because until today, teachers weren't allowed to schedule an appointment.
Okay, so they're like in line. They're in line. I guess, let's say it's 1,000 people that need to get the shot. Okay, so and of the 1,000, 20 of them our teachers. Are they at the end of that line, or
they're
are they
just in with everybody else?
Oh, okay. So the 70-year-old who is waiting behind the 20, let's make her 24, 24-year-old, very attractive teacher. So now the 70-year-old is waiting for that woman and her twin. They're twins, Tom, and they're both teachers. So are they both in front of the more vulnerable part of the population?
John, let's leave your fantasies out of this.
What is it, Tom? I'm doing radio. I'm painting pictures over here.
Yes,
I can't paint
I know
a picture.
You are.
Jacob.
It's
Jacob.
To feel a little
can I paint a picture? Can I paint a picture?
Well, I mean, they have to be appropriate pictures, John. I think that's the point.
It's fine. All right. I'm not going into what they're wearing. All right. Here's the thing. Sean, you are not. Sean, don't encourage me. Tom, the question I'm asking is the vulnerable, which are the sick and the old. They are the vulnerable. Are the teachers vulnerable? No, they're not vulnerable. They have to get there and get their shot because what, they're essential personnel, so they need to get their shot. They're not vulnerable.
No.
They won't die of this, but they have more leverage than the 70-year-old woman sitting there in her house. By the way, she also is very attractive and has a twin. Okay, you feel better, Jacob?
You're not digging yourself out of that hole, John. The problem here is that I'm not quite sure what your point is. Are you disagreeing with the president's decision to put the teachers in that first group along with the 65-year-olds and up? Is that your concern?
Yes. Okay. My point is that
the CDC
came out and said it's not. They don't have to get vaccinated. They don't have to get vaccinated. And
they
the unions
can.
Are saying
it's
no,
not
no.
a requirement. Yes.
Not a requirement. So who do we want to vaccinate? You want to save the lives and stop the people from getting sick that are old and sick. Those are the people that should be getting it.
They're
the 24-year-old, very unattractive woman with her twin doesn't need it in order to not get sick and die, correct?
Yes.
Fine.
However,
that's the point.
There are conflicting or competitive social goods that we're looking at. And one is there is a real push to try to get schools back open. And because of that, the teachers getting vaccinated would help ease some of those schools opening, because some have already announced, like Washington School District and Edmonds and maybe Seattle or maybe Kent, that they're not going to reopen before the end of this school year. This might give enough energy to get those things opened. And so it's seen as another social good to get the schools opened. It would be easier if more teachers were vaccinated. So it's a competing good. And if the 70-year-old woman had, you know, was like me, you know, trying to find an appointment, she probably already has an appointment. If they haven't, yeah, now there's going to be 200,000 more people competing for that. But they're all still in that first group, Group 1B.
Yes. Well, the reason the teachers weren't going back is variety of reasons. But
yeah,
that
was one.
The company line is we don't feel safe. We don't feel safe. Although apparently we do follow science, and science says you got nothing to worry about if the kids are under the age of 12. But again, we follow science when we want to follow science. You have very little to worry about if the kids are under the age of 12 or 14. But if we follow science when science works for us. When we don't want to follow science, we say we don't feel safe. That's denying science. And then you say, well, we got to vaccinate these teachers. You don't have to, but again, we choose not to follow science in that regard. We're following the politics. And the politics is, hey, I'd like to get paid my full salary and work half the week. And that's what you've got going on right now. And that is
well, that's
why,
your
Tom?
Contention.
You don't think that's true? You don't
no.
think that's true?
I think teachers are working just as hard from home as they are in the classroom. In fact, for some, it's harder and more of a pain.
Yeah.
They may be getting used to it now, but again, these teachers were all trained to do in-classroom teaching, not Zoom teaching, and so it's been a struggle for a lot of teachers.
Yep. Okay. How many outbreaks have there been, Chris? Oh, hang on, Chris.
Our state actually defines an outbreak as two or more students who aren't in the same family. So when people think outbreak, like, my gosh, it must be crazy, it's literally two students. And that's the bulk of them. Most cases we see in school for outbreaks are two or three students or two or three people. The protocols are great for putting those students or educators in some cases in quarantine. Zero hospitalizations so far from any COVID exposure into the school setting. We track that data really closely now with local health officials. We have pilot districts all over the state now who are using routine COVID vaccine tests to see if this is spreading in their schools. And so far, tremendous success in keeping these cases down.
All right. Jacob, you started to say something?
Oh, no. I was just saying the fourth cut there where Ursula asks Rakedahl his message to teachers who don't want to return.
You know that there are several districts that have already said, we are not going to return back to in-person learning in any form through the end of this school year. Is there a chance that they can be pressured to readjust or reconsider that decision?
Great question.
They need to reconsider that decision. This is a really fluid situation. It has been since the beginning of this. And so definitive proclamations about things that are months away are never a good idea. This is a game changer for protecting the safety of our staff. And again, given the science of this around young kids, every district has a really viable option here to get at least their K-5 open, if not all their middle and high school students. So they should revisit that.
I looked up, I just put in the Googleating machine, governor working school reopen. I didn't say which governor, and all the list of all these governors. And then I thought, okay, Newsom, that's an interesting case, right? Because they've got
California,
huge lockdowns, but they got huge deaths. Newsom is standing up there, and he's leading the way. And here's what they did. We've got a great big pot of money, everybody. And if you get in and you start opening up and you are in there by April 1st, you got everything going and all the other stuff, you can enjoy this big pot of money. In fact, those of you, every day that you're not there, the big pot of money goes down 1%. But here it is. Get in there, get your cash, and not just cash for like PPP and all that other stuff. They already have all that nonsense, the plexiglass and everything in place. What they're saying is, this is additional money. We've got more money for you. Get in there, open up. And if you get in there and open up, you can enjoy the riches. In some schools, we will not be bribed by going, he's like, fine, if you don't want it, fine. But the governor of the state of California really taking a leadership role, probably because he's people want to, in, you know,
I was going to say,
whatever,
are you singing the praises of Gavin Newsom?
No, what I'm singing the praises of, I think got a leader standing up there with the idea of like, look, I know I take 57. This is what Inslee should say. We take 57% of your money, of your property taxes, and we put it into the schools, and these schools that continue to flounder and not really do that well overall for the last 15 years. But that aside, hey, everybody, let's get going. This is the most important thing we do in the state of Washington is to educate these kids. He should be the leader on this. He sits back on his thumbs. I don't know where they are. I wouldn't want to smell them. And where is he on driving forward and getting people at the table and getting people to do something? Chris Rakedal sits there and goes, well, I'd like to. You know, it's very bad if they don't. He has no power. It goes all the way down to the local. But you would think that the governor could do something, wouldn't you, Tom? Don't you think that's where it starts?
Is the governor has for the last month he has been advocating for opening up schools as much as possible and actually going he's visited various schools to sort of check them out in varying degrees, so he has been advocating
for anything.
Now he hasn't put his political reputation on the line, I suppose he could be doing more, but he has been calling for it. This is a weird thing in which a Republican like you is advocating for states overriding local control. It's the local districts that have the ultimate say-so. And he can advocate all he wants, but he can't call the shots. I think that was relatively forced. Given that the superintendent doesn't have any power to make this happen, the fact that he told Ursula that this was indeed what these school districts that have already made their determination, they should reconsider, that's a forceful advocacy position for somebody who doesn't have ultimate power.
We heard for months and months and months the Constitution, the state of Washington, to fully fund K to 12, whatever the years were, right? Fully, the governor talked about this and how important education is. I realize it gets down to the local level of like, you know, we're going to teach this and this and this, or we'll teach, you know, what to do with a banana, a condom. We got all that. But ultimately, when the state, the biggest part of our budget is education, you would assume that the guy that is on top would be in there wanting this stuff to be in place. What happens is it all breaks down into these smaller sections. It's harder to organize. I see the governor of North Carolina doing it. I see the governor of Illinois involved. I see the governor of Colorado's involved, Ohio, Utah. These governors are in there and say, sit down, work this out, figure out how to get this thing, get back in there. We're taking all of this money from all of these people, and we are not delivering an education to them. Get this done. And I don't like, as a Republican, I don't like necessarily top-down management, but certainly if you're going to keep stealing everybody's money and not providing any sort of service, it would be nice if the person in charge were to step up and say, do something. That's all.
Okay, and he has, but that's all he said. I'll grant you that.
Tom.
That's all he said.
He's walked around with his big lumbering body. No, he walks around with his mask on. I can't go to Washington. He's in the classroom.
He should be wearing a mask, John. He's modeling.
Sit down in the get in a room, smoke-filled room like they used to do, and work it out. Force people to do something. It's not being done but it doesn't matter. They, by the way, the teachers, some of these groups are saying, oh, no, we're not going back until we get two shots. We'll get the first one, we'll wait for 2 weeks, and go back in and get the second one. By that time, school's going to be over.
Well, right? I mean, yeah, we are running up against a deadline clock. It's true. And right now, I mean, it would be, I am waiting to hear from Lake Washington School District, for instance, to see if they are reconsidering and what the factors were. One of the things they said was it would be too cumbersome to try to set up all these new rules with this hybrid business with such a short time, in order to kind of, exploit it, unless we went with the suggestion that we were talking about yesterday, with that lawmaker who said, hey, let's take our spring break now, or, you know, our summer break in effect, and then go to school over the summer. If that happened, I think that there would be better chance. I just don't know if, again, whatever kind of negotiations need to be made between teachers' unions and parents, that they may not approve of that. They may have planned school vacation, you know, summer vacations and all that already, but that's something that could accommodate that. Otherwise, yeah, we are coming up. If the first of June or the first week of June is the, you know, the beginning of when we start thinking about summer, this is only a couple months, away. Yeah.
Another wasted year. By the way,
we've got to pound it, and we've got to pound it till it's done.
You love that drop.
I do. I know. You know how much I love bringing up Sweden. So look up Sweden. You ready?
Sure. I don't know what the latest
little
is, but the last thing I saw,
little
not
or
well.
No distancing. Well, let's talk about teachers. Little or no distancing. Kids didn't have to wear a mask if they didn't want to. They, you know, had them wash their hands. They're Swedish, so they got clean hands. 39,000 teachers that they studied. How many died?
None.
Close some. One.
Okay. But they have very low transmission rates in that. It's not quite comparable, but...
What's not comparable?
Sweden and the United States. One of the rules of the road for the CDC is, what's the transmission rate in the community where the school is? And in Sweden, right. That's why comparing the United States and Sweden, Stockholm to New York City, for instance, it doesn't work.
There's a woman or a man standing in a classroom with a bunch of little kids teaching them. And they did a study of the 39,000 teachers. One of them have died. 17 were hospitalized. One died. And that's and it's all these Swedish kids running around with their, you know, blonde hair and stuff. And they're all in the classroom. They don't have them separated by a whole bunch of plexiglass. There they all are. So there's, you know, always interesting thing to see how other people are handling something like this. But
sure
all right.
It is.
All right. I don't know why you weren't supporting me, Jacob, when I was trying to paint pictures. I'm doing radio here, so I paint a picture of a couple of teachers, and Tom gets all nervous.
Sean, nervous. I'm nervous for you, John.
For what, Tom? What?
For what coming off as a dirty old man.
That's not dirty. You're painting crazy. I'm painting pictures.
I don't have anything to say.
How's traffic look? How's that traffic out there?
You're
it's
smart,
beautiful.
Tracy.
Here we go. Writing to us at mynorthwest.com. You text as well at 98973. You already got a text message from Larry in accounting, who encourages me to talk more about schools and education, Tom.
You mean the Comely twins, right?
Paint that picture, Curly, that says the text message that I got as well.
that is terrible. This is the oddest subject, and I was just watching Rare Film of Helen Keller.
She meets her 10th U.S. president. With all of them, she has campaigned hard to improve the lives of disabled persons everywhere.
It's a film of Helen Keller through the years. And 155,000 people have watched it. I mean, I didn't realize it had influence with so many different presidents, and she was famous for this and famous for that. But then you go online, you look under Helen Keller is a fraud, and there's small groups, large groups, there's people that have dedicated their life to just saying outright that this is her story is not real, and we were sold a bill of goods. And there are small groups of people that have really sort of a cottage industry trying to unmask this fraud to be able to say that she was not as blind and deaf as people say she was, or that she was not, and Ann Sullivan was making money off her, and the whole thing is just a great big canard. And I actually have a friend, my I know somebody who is in this group. I don't know them personally. I just know that they've taken it upon themselves to.
You know everybody, John.
No, it's this. I don't know this person well, Tom. I told you in a pre-show meeting who it is.
Yeah.
And, I don't know them. I know of them, and that they. Oh yeah, they're all into trying to say that Helen Keller was not what people said she was.
Yeah, Slate has a great analysis of what's going on. And right now, she is at the top of a list of conspiracy theories going around on TikTok. And what this article does is say this is not she battled this her entire life. And they say that anybody who is disabled, many people who are disabled, say this happens to them all the time, that their disability is being challenged by people who, you know, are able-bodied, I guess, and they're suspicious of them. And this is just the latest illustration of what's happening with Helen Keller. So there's a popular hashtag, Helen Keller isn't, you know, is fake or isn't real. These TikTok videos are very popular. And so, of course, they do this analysis of what gives. And going back into the history of this kind of stuff, they say that people just like to kind of knock her down just because she was seen as too prominent. In fact, they talked to a number of disabled people. In fact, there's a woman who wrote this book called Blind Rage recently in the last decade or so. And she was talking about when she was growing up, they always used to hang, she is blind, they always used to hang kind of Helen Keller over her as a, what do you have to complain about? Look at how tough Helen Keller did that she grew up, even though she was blind and shared the disability, she grew up somewhat resentful of her. And so there's always been this kind of effort at kind of knocking down this myth. And they say even Helen Keller was a victim of this because she was seen as the saintly you know, blind person who managed to do all these wonderful things, but she was resistant to that. She was put on a pedestal and they wouldn't let her get off the pedestal. And what she really wanted to do in her later life was talk about relatively radical politics. She was a very left-leaning person, but nobody wanted to hear about that. They only wanted to hear about what it was like when she was a child learning the connection between the word water and water and Ann Sullivan and all of that.
Yeah.
So that's one basic point. There is an interesting development near the end of the article, John. I don't know if you want to jump in now or I should just wrap up the final aspect too.
Well, she was used for a variety of different causes, Helen Keller was. And because she was so famous and everybody, it was one of these things at a different time, how people, you know, Lindy and flying around the world. And we were always looking for these great big sort of iconic heroes that could push giant causes. Helen Keller, one of the other things she did was she said, you know what? Venereal disease causes child blindness. Let's do something about that. She was part of that. She was part of making sure that Braille was provided. She really became sort of the figurehead that pushed civil society and social changes as this person who then opened up the world for others. So I don't know. I certainly believe that she was at 19 months. She went blind and deaf and she lost her sight and was unable to communicate. But still, Ann Sullivan was able to get her to sort of come through and she made historic changes in the world, whether it was she was as blind and deaf and as people say she was. The last part of the article, Tom, was?
So it's just this thrust that right now, this part is fair game. We want to reassess anybody and everybody who's been held up as like a role model. And so you think it's going too far. The way we're reassessing the Confederate generals that were, you know, venerated in the South, the way we're reexamining George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and all of these, I think she's as fair game as anybody. I know people are looking at, say, Mother Teresa, who is, I think, an example of someone who was, you know, she's now a saint, I think, but put on a pedestal. And then the question is, well, did she deserve that pedestal or is it more a marketing campaign? I think those are all legitimate questions. The thing is that you examine that and you realize that the people that are so honored are not necessarily benefiting from that kind of a pedestal. And that's sort of what the thrust here of this is. Right now, the knock against Helen Keller sounds a lot like an Alex Jones conspiracy theory, you know, like the Newton shooting didn't really happen. It's kind of like fun to be counter the sort of accepted narrative, but there seems to be not much to go on it other than the fact that it spins out of somebody's crazy fantasy just to prove them wrong.
Right. And then people use it as a way of sort of trying to find stuff. Well, I found this and I found that, and they share this and share that. So they're trying to piece together something that didn't happen to disprove something that people have been told has happened. It's the same thing. Yes. We never landed on the moon. You know, yes. Why can you see the reflection of this in the guy's helmet? It's like, oh, my God, really? Okay. Right. Oh, there's some other guy runs into some rat hole and finds something else. Like, I saw something advertised the other day on the Internet. It's a hat. Jacob probably has one that you can wear that helps stop 5G from getting into your brain. Jacob, have you seen this thing?
No. Is it? I mean, how close is it to the material of tinfoil?
I don't know, but all I know is you have to order them. They're going very quickly. It's the fastest selling hat for 5G interference that you can get online right now. And I thought there's got to be some joke at the end of the thing. Guy's walking around and how great he feels because he's able to block 5G. And then all of these sites that they can send you to explaining what 5G is doing to, I don't know, baby alligators. Or I mean, just nuts what people would put out there. And I looked online and, oh, my God, all these people are buying the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, and again, you say I know everybody.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it, but I know someone who really believes that 5G and COVID are connected. Have you heard that one?
Yes, I have. Yep. It's everywhere, John. Just keep your eyes down, focused on your business at hand, please.
That's right. Business at hand. All right. Tracy Taylor, what is the straight poop on what's happening out there, huh? All right, ready? Look for more and more gas stations to go the way the dodo bird. Certainly in the city of Seattle, it's tough to find them. There's one from the station not far away. You get the yellow light on your car, and then you're like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to make it up the hill to Capitol Hill to go to that gas station? Cities just simply don't want them. They think that, one, they encourage people to drive cars that are powered by gasoline, and they would like to eventually convert over gas stations to electric. And in some cities, they take the population of the city. This is in California in some small cities. And then they say, well, there are 160,000 people. Therefore, we will have X amount of gas stations and no more. So, as cities look to ban them, they're simply not building any new ones. The ones that are there will stay there until finally they are obsolete. I guess that's the way this would be written in history, Tom.
Well, yeah, that's sort of long term. Right now, the reason we're doing this, Petaluma, just a city in California, just mm-hmm. passed this a law that said they're allowing for no new gas stations. The yeah. argument they're making is that we have enough gas stations. We don't need more gas stations. And so they're holding the line. They are not trying to get rid of the gas stations that we have, at least for now. They're also not allowing gas stations to add new pumps. So whatever exists right now is deemed enough, and I don't know if that's mm-hmm. the majority of drivers feel that way or not, but they're deemed enough. They are encouraging them, though, to add a more, electric vehicle stations, I guess, at these gas stations. But yeah, this is a trend, and I think I've noticed it in Seattle. I've been here most of my life, and it's like, yeah, they're fewer and far between. They're on the big arterials like Aurora and 85th up in my neck of the woods, but there are fewer and fewer. I don't know at this point. I haven't heard a big yelp from drivers that it's impossible to find. I think that right now we probably have enough, but not too many. And given how many more people have arrived in Seattle, we haven't passed this law, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But the tendency, the politics of it is such that I can see this, gaining ground here.
Yeah. Well, if you have land and you buy the piece of property and you want to put a gas station in, it's hard because by time you finish trying to pay all the bills, you simply can't make it enough selling gas and soda and chips and all that other stuff in order to pay for it because the cost of the land is so expensive. There is a gas station on Main Street in Old Bellevue, and I have heard from some people that I think they think that thing's going to go away because best use. It's right on the corner, Nice looking piece of property. The idea is you tear that thing up, get those tanks out of there, and put something in there that would be better use for that community. I don't know how you do that. I guess you can't do some sort of a taking from them, but
no.
Maybe the guy has to apply for permits to keep it going, or maybe it just becomes too cost prohibitive for them to continue to pay the taxes because they can't quite make it by selling gasoline. And most of them don't really make anything on the gallon of gas. You make it all by the person coming in and buying something else in the store. That's where all the money is.
Yeah, made. I wonder about the economics of gas stations these days. The other thing is that if you are going to sell that gas station, let's say you decide, Dick, I'm getting out of the business. I'll let a developer move in and put something else up. The developer and or the gas station owner is responsible for cleaning up whatever toxic, you know, fuel has seeped into the ground for all those. So that adds to the expense of any kind of development of these places as well.
Well, here in the Clum, there is a gas station that is for sale that's on the left-hand side. It's an old one, really old building, cool old building. Looks like it's from the 40s. It's there on the left-hand side, and people go, oh, I'm going to buy that and turn that into a, you know, coffee, whatever. Well, you still have to dig up those tanks. Not only dig up those tanks, but then get all the dirt that's around those tanks, all the rules of having to get all that up and clean it. By the time you get all that out of there, forget it. By the way, the Clum, also previously known as Cleellum, prides itself on the place where people come to get gas. We've got lots of gas stations here, and I missed today's community beautification meeting at 10 o'clock, but we're really seriously about pushing the fact that come to Cleellum, the Clum, and get gas, because people stop here and then
that
go to Wenatchee.
The best slogan. Come to the Clum and get gas. I don't know.
Yes. This is what we found out. People stop here to get gas and then go on to Leavenworth and Wenatchee. So this is like a prime stop.
Yeah, so, it's the first city, post the...
Right. And I had suggested, which didn't get a laugh, which was, we've got great restaurants. Eat in our restaurants and get gas. And they're like, well, they didn't put the two and two together, but I'm going to push that hard.
Yeah. We're gaseous.
Gaseous. Come on in here. Get gas. All right. That's what's happening in the Clum. What's that? What's that, Tracy?
We stop there in the Clum every time we go to Eastern Washington. We stop at the gas station. They're just coming off the exit. And then we go down to Dairy Queen and we get a chicken tenders basket and then continue on our way.
You go right past the telephone museum there in the corner. You don't even stop, do you?
Nope. But we do have some family property out there in the Clum too. So we come out there every summer.
All right, I think it's catching on better than the.
It is catching on, Tom. She has to kind of catch herself, but then
stumbled a bit.
She's embracing it. All right.
Well, you know, I might as well just hop on the bandwagon, right?
That's right.
Get on.